Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red, White, and You show. My name is Nathan Jackman, and we have a very special program for you today. We have State Senator Jack Martins joining us today. Hello, Mr. Martins. Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
So before we get started, I'm going to read our disclaimer. The program you are listening to may contain language or material that could be considered offensive. The views expressed are those of the DJ and not necessarily those of WDOT or other WDOT station members. We therefore advise you to carefully consider whether you or your children should listen. All right, so for our first question, I'm going to ask about something that you've been going around the community for, I would say, the past couple weeks, talking about education and education funding in the state budget. Would you like to explain why you have been pushing against the state budget's cuts against the education departments of many school districts on Long Island?
Sure. Happy to. Thank you. You know, state budgets set priorities. For us in New York, the priority has always been making sure that we properly fund education. In this year's budget, the governor has proposed cutting education across the board to every school district, certainly on Long Island, and specifically impacting many of our high-performing school districts like Port Washington. So at a time when we're increasing spending in the state budget, there really is no place for cutting aid to school, cutting programs and forcing schools to cut programs, and you know, not having the resources in place to give every child a proper education.
Do you think what programs specifically would be cut if this was passed, per se?
Well, that's up to each school district. You know, if they have less money, they have to make decisions themselves as to which programs they would cut. It could be really anything. For some school districts, it means laying off teachers, cutting back on after-school or athletic or art and music programs. But it really depends on a school-by-school basis. So you'd have to speak to, you know, for example, in Port Washington, your school administration, your school board. The work at the state level is really to provide the resources so that the local school districts can actually take that money and place it where it makes the most sense.
And do you think that the state has an obligation to support other things other than school, and that's why they're taking away our budget, such as migrants that are coming in, which obviously there's not enough funding for them? Do you think that that should be funded more than the school districts, or are you against that?
Well, I think, again, it's a question of priorities. If you ask me, if I'm going to prioritize our local communities, our local tax base, our property owners, homeowners, as against prioritizing people who have arrived recently into the country, I'm going to do that every time. It's a question of how much and what is our responsibility with regard to that. So to give you an example, if we're funding this, in my opinion, self-created migrant crisis to the tune of $2.4 billion, you know, that shouldn't come at the expense of providing the school districts with the resources they need so that they can continue to provide all kinds of programming in the school, including stuff like, you know, a local radio station or whatnot. So, I think, you know, when we have to decide where we're prioritizing, since you can't spend the same dollar twice, you really want to be able to make sure, one, you take care of everything that you're responsible for first before you take any new responsibilities on, like, you know, helping with this migrant crisis, which is a new thing, but it shouldn't come at the expense of, you know, continuing to fund schools, roads, infrastructure, local communities, you know, senior citizen programs and the like. So, I'm going to prioritize schools probably every time.
So akin to students and I guess kind of schools, you've created a petition and also a bill that would have parents regulate social media for students, which I think is a pretty big issue on Long Island and around the country, and has been proposed also on the federal level. Can you explain why you've proposed this bill?
Sure. No, thank you for the question. It's it really is an important issue. It's not only impacting us here in New York and on Long Island, but across the country. We have a significant mental health crisis in the country. It impacts teens more so. And I think there's a lot of evidence, probably overwhelming, that a lot of that has to do with social media platforms and pressure that is placed on all of us through those social media platforms, sometimes with very little consequence. So the idea is modeled on a law that was passed in Utah that would require parents to be part of signing up for these platforms, giving, if you're a minor, giving the minor the additional, task of making sure that before they sign on, that their parents are with them, that they're able to monitor it. It puts restrictions on access to it. The platforms would automatically shut off at 10 p.m. unless there's a sign off from the parents as well. I see it as one more step in allowing for pushback on what has been, I think, an overwhelming mental health crisis for each and every one of our communities. People have handled it differently. There are places in the country like Washington State, Seattle, where they have sued for money to help pay for the costs of addressing the mental health crisis. Other places like Utah have initiated legislation, and certainly on the federal level, I think they've done more or less the same thing. We all have to do our part in moving forward, providing resources for local communities, families, and the state to push back on these platforms that have prioritized clicks over what's best for the people who are on the platform, many of them, frankly, suffering from mental health crises as a result.
So when you talk about programs, what type of program would you suppose could be introduced or further funded that could help teens on Long Island with mental health?
Well, I think the state should be funding mental health intervention through schools. We've spoken to many of our school districts about the need for resources in the school district, a lot of it having to do with social workers, people who are trained to deal with mental health issues, not leaving it up to each and every individual family to have to deal with it. So there are limited places where I think the state can actually provide resources where they can actually be most effective. Schools happen to be one of them.
Mm-hmm. Further going into, a different kind of health, you've proposed a bill that would provide any fertilized human ovum or human embryo existing outside of a human uterus will not be considered an unborn child or human being. And I would guess this is because of the Alabama Supreme Court decision. What are your thoughts on that decision, and why would you propose this law?
Well, I think it's absurd, frankly, for anyone to claim that a frozen embryo outside of a body is a human being or person. The ramifications of a decision like that are significant for many families who aren't able to have a family. The idea of IVF as an alternative makes all the sense in the world, and we shouldn't put obstacles in the way. Now, what are the obstacles? If the frozen embryo is considered to be a person, then you have to care for it. You have to maintain it. You have to keep it in that state. There are all kinds of questions as to whether or not, if it's discarded or for any reason, if the embryo is damaged, have you committed a crime? All of those issues, which I think are absurd, go away if you actually just recognize that it's not a person. So in light of the Alabama Supreme Court decision, I think it was important that we in New York make it very clear for all of the families who may be seeking IVF as an alternative, or as an assistant in starting their own families, but also for the industry, you know, the medical industry that no longer or probably does not want and did not want this additional responsibility of personhood assigned to a frozen embryo. It's important that we provide clarity in state law. So I drafted the bill, submitted it, hoping that it gets some time on the floor and we're able to actually debate it and discuss it. But it's important that we send a message that we're going to prioritize making it easier for people to have families as opposed to making it harder.
Now, in terms of making it easier to have families, New York State has it, so we're you're allowed to have an abortion in our state. Do you support repealing that because of people wanting to have families?
No, two different things.
Okay.
One is the acknowledging whether or not a frozen embryo outside a body is a person, which it clearly is not. And the other one is, you know, acknowledging, when that decision starts. I've supported a woman's right to choose. I'll continue to support a woman's right to choose. I'll continue to oppose late-term and partial birth abortions in New York, as that has expanded in many instances right until birth. So, there's a line there that I won't cross, but two separate issues. IVF, supporting having families, decisions. You know, I think it really comes down to fundamentally understanding that a woman has a right to make those decisions for herself and will make those decisions that are best suited for them. In one instance, inside her own body, her choice. The other instance, a frozen embryo outside the body that doesn't have any viability outside of a woman's body should not be considered a person.
Okay, so moving on to another different, I guess, kind of health is environmental health. We've had issues here on Long Island where we've had flooding of roads and other issues that have come of rainstorms. Do you support having the state allocate funds to help protect the shoreline of Port Washington and other communities in our district?
Of course. It's part of, the global responsibility for regional approach to storms, to catastrophes. You know, I think we have to do more. There has to be a layered approach to protecting the environment across Long Island and certainly in places like Port Washington. We have to do a better job at protecting our sole source aquifer. We have to make sure that we provide sewers so we're not putting nitrogen directly into the water. That nitrogen then goes into our coastal wetlands, destroying the coastal wetlands. And it's those coastal wetlands that provide storm surge protection when we do have severe storms. So there are multiple layers when it comes to protecting shorelines, but it starts with environmental awareness. It starts with sewering and removing nitrates from our soils. And it starts with understanding that, this is all one big planet. And as people have said, we don't inherit the land from our parents. We borrow it from our children. So we have a responsibility to make sure that we protect it and we keep it, properly and safeguard it so that our children have it for their lives and for their children's lives and so on. It's an intergenerational responsibility, protecting the environment, and certainly water, coastlands are a big part of that.
And in terms of clean energy, in terms of building wind farms on Long Island or off the coast of Long Island, do you support the state's effort to do that?
I do. I think, we have to transition to a green energy economy. It's imperative that we do so. Get away from fossil fuels. I think most people would agree that that's the direction that we're going in. I think the only argument, I guess, for dispute is, the transition. How do we get there? When do we get there? If we understand that New York State as a whole is, as they say, somewhere around the 15th largest economy in the world, right around the economy of South Korea. And yet, for such a large economy, it makes up less than 1% of the carbon footprint of the entire world, then we are doing an extraordinary job as a state and as a society in recognizing the need to limit our carbon footprint. And we should be very careful as we move forward that we do everything we can, not only to continue to limit our carbon footprint, but also not to do things that are going to put people at risk. So there's a balance that needs to be struck between continuing our push towards a greener economy and being able to get there quickly and effectively.
So I guess this has to do with a greener economy. The city is going to put in, well, I guess, implement congestion pricing within the next couple of months inside Manhattan. You have publicly been against congestion pricing. Would you explain that position further? And
sure.
Do you think?
Let me just tell you, because you made a point. It has nothing to do with a greener economy, congestion pricing, and I'll tell you why. They say it does, and that's what makes it harder to frankly understand. They have said that they need to remove cars from Midtown Manhattan, and that their effort in imposing a fee for cars is to make sure that cars don't go into Midtown. It takes away all of the congestion, it takes away all of the pollution that comes from those cars, but then it funded the MTA, I think to about $1 billion that is going to come from congestion pricing. So if their move is actually to prevent cars from going into Midtown Manhattan, then they wouldn't be actually using it as a funding source from the MTA and relying on the fact that there are going to be $1 billion in fees raised from it. So it seems that it's incredibly hypocritical. They are counting on people continuing to drive. They're counting on the same number of cars being there. They're just counting on putting a fee on it, which I find to be, frankly, offensive. If they really wanted to prevent cars from going into Midtown, close off those streets, limit the people who can go there, but charging people to go there and then using it as a basis for raising funds for the MTA, where if you don't raise the $1 billion, you're going to create a hole in that budget. What you really want is $1 billion, not necessarily a greener or cleaner environment. And that's unfortunate.
And in regards to the MTA, there is a crisis on the subway in terms of violence and also ridership going down and fare evasion. The congestion pricing would help supplement that, but what do you think would be another method in terms of funding the MTA and making subways safer while keeping them affordable?
Sure. I think, the key, first of all, congestion pricing is going towards capital costs. So it really doesn't go into operating expenses for things like the subway. I think you have to enforce laws in New York. Unfortunately, we've gotten away from actually holding criminals accountable, which has emboldened them. They have, and it's a recent report that showed that 38 individuals had committed nearly 1,200 crimes in the subway. 38 people. That means they've been committed crimes, had been arrested, had been let out with no bail, and gone back and just continued to commit crimes. So let's hold people accountable. When they commit crimes, let's hold them on bail. Let's remove them from society to keep everyone else safe. And frankly, when it comes to the cost of the MTA and revenues, if the MTA prioritized actually collecting the revenues that they're supposed to get, they lose between $800 million and $1 billion a year on turnstile jumpers, and they know it. And yet they're not prioritizing making sure that people pay the $2.90 to take a subway ride. It's absurd. There are literally tens, if not hundreds of millions of fares that are being lost because people disregard their responsibility to pay for that fare, which puts the burden, frankly, on everyone else. So if you're going to take the subway, you pay for the subway. If you're going to take the Long Island Railroad, you pay for the Long Island Railroad. It's a very dangerous message when the MTA stops enforcing its own fares. And the message it sends to everyone, including to those who ride into the city from Long Island, including Port Washington, is, you know, if you don't want to pay the fare, don't pay it, because the MTA is not going to force you to pay it, and they're not going to force you to get off the train or the subway as a condition. Very dangerous. We should go back to enforcing laws and requiring people to pay for use of, you know, the MTA, whether it's the railroad, the buses, or the subways.
Do you think that the new turnstile, well, the new entryways that have been proposed would help help create more revenue and stop fare evasion?
I, you know what, I'm not sure. You know, I think the new turnstiles or the new safeguards for the new turnstiles have been widely panned. I haven't seen them myself, but I've seen that you know, concerns that they're not effective. People are still holding doors open for each other. They're not necessarily jumping over the turnstiles, although that happens as well in different stations. But there are a number of ways that they get through that point and not pay their fare. And the MTA used to have people there watching and enforcing, and they just don't do it anymore. They should go back to enforcing their own fares.
So let's pivot to, I guess, a more controversial topic here. You've been publicly advocating for new redistricting laws in New York, and you've actually proposed a law that would limit the power of the legislature to amend the redistricting plans by the Independent Commission, which is exactly what happened, I would say, a few weeks ago when the legislature rejected the plan by the Independent Commission. Can you explain your position further and why you proposed this law more?
Sure. Well, I sat on the Redistricting Commission when we came up with the original, I guess, set of plans 2 years ago. So I sort of have firsthand knowledge on that process. When we And I voted for the constitutional amendment that actually changed the way that we redistricted, taking it away from the legislature and creating the Independent Redistricting Commission. I think we need to have independence when it comes to redistricting. It should not, you know, lines should not be drawn by the legislators who actually benefit from those lines. But there was a law that was put in place back, I think it was around 2012, maybe 2013, when the constitutional amendment was enacted or was passed, that would have limited the legislature's ability to change the maps that were proposed by the Redistricting Commission to 2%. When these maps came out this year, the legislature changed that and said, notwithstanding the fact that we have a law in the books that requires us to follow a 2% or not to modify more than 2% of any district as proposed by the Redistricting Commission, they ignored that and they chose to, in many instances, go beyond the 2% limit that they themselves had imposed. It just didn't suit their needs at this point. So in order to reinforce that, I proposed a redistricting law that would be a constitutional amendment and put the 2% right in the Constitution so that future legislatures don't take it upon themselves to change the law to suit their needs.
And do you support, well, there are other efforts by members of your party in other states that have been to skew the odds in their favor as well. Do you support those efforts, or do you just are completely against partisan redistricting altogether?
Yeah, I'm against partisan redistricting altogether. It's we should all start with one basic premise. Politicians should not be drawing lines to suit themselves. And if we start with that, the lines that are drawn should be the least partisan. They should allow for the greatest opportunity for people to, you know, if a certain community to get elected. There's a lot of risk when it comes to drawing lines for redistricting. And there's a lot of abuse that can be incorporated there if people aren't, if it's not done properly. If you consider, the impacts to, to many communities in terms of splitting those communities or aggregating communities in order for one party or the other to actually get political advantage, it's unfortunate. It happens everywhere. Frankly, whether it happens on the Republican side or the Democrat side, I think it's pretty clear that neither party, holds itself in pretty good stead nationally. But we do what we can locally to try and push back on that. And I've said before, and I'll continue to say now, whatever lines they draw, as long as those lines are legal and frankly fair, should be good enough for any of us. We should not be playing politics with a person's right to choose their own representative.
Well, Mr. Martins, I would like to thank you again for coming on our show, but we have unfortunately run out of time here today. Would you like to say any last thoughts to our viewers before we go?
No, listen, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you for the invitation. This has been great. You've obviously done your homework. You were prepared to ask me a bunch of tough questions. And, kudos to you and to the Port Washington School District and to the community. I wish you the best. Good luck. If there's anything that we can do in the future, if there are any questions you have, or if you want to have me back on to go over a couple of issues that we may be working on, happy to do so.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for the compliments. Really appreciate it. Me and my sound man, Brian, really, really appreciate that. So that is it for us today. We will be back on next week on Wednesday. We'll have a lot of fun things to talk about on that show, and we'll be joined by Paul Trombley on that show. Thank you all for watching and listening, and thank you for Mr. Martins to coming on.